right. That's Johnny Winters with Johnny Be Good. Before that, we heard the Cherry Poppin' Daddies, So Long Toots, N Train with Dancing in the Light. Dancing in the Light, and Doors did Break On Through. Bearded Youth Quest, Banana Flip Flops, Bellowhead, Three Drunken Ladies, English Beat did She's Going. The Who, Won't Get Fooled Again. I think that some of these I already said that I played. So we'll just put that list away. Okie dokie, it's time for the Earth, Air, and Water Report. And let's see. Highway conditions. Klondike Highway, bare roads with some slush possible around the border. And the Alaska Highway and Haines Highway both are calling bare roads. Today's ferry has come and gone a long time ago. Friday's ferry is Leconte, arriving in Haines at 11:30 a.m., arriving in Skagway at 1 p.m., departing Skagway at 1:30, and departing Haines at 4 p.m. on Friday, bound for Juneau. And we will have, we are in the midst of a low tide, minus 1 foot. There'll be a high tide at 4:18 this afternoon, 14.8 feet. A low tide, 10:04 tonight, 3.6 feet. 15 hours and 59 minutes of daylight today. Sunrise was at 4:59, and the sun will set at 8:58, gaining 5 minutes of daylight today. Tomorrow's sunrise is at 4:57. Now for your local weather, which is made possible in part by Alaska Seaplanes, now with IFR, capable pilots and aircraft. Daily scheduled flights from Haines and Skagway to Juneau and beyond. At the airport in Haines and Skagway and online at flyalaskaseaplanes.com. Skagway side today, cloudy with a chance of rain, highs around 48, lows tonight around 43. Friday, rain, highs around 51, lows around 47. And on Saturday, rainy and windy, highs around 52, lows around 46. Haines, Klukwan, and the Chilkat Valley today, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain, highs around 48. Tonight, lows 37 to 42. Friday and Saturday, rain, highs around 52, lows around 44. In the marine forecast, calls for a weather front will move northeast across the Gulf of Alaska today and tonight. A stronger front will move east over the central and eastern Gulf Friday through Saturday, producing heavy rain over the northeast Gulf Coast and portions of the northern panhandle. That's us. Local waters today, small craft advisory this afternoon through tonight. Today, south wind 20 knots, increasing to 25 knots in the afternoon. Seas 4 feet, building to 5 feet. Friday and Saturday, south wind 30 knots, seas 6 feet with rain. Hey, stay tuned. You got your local lineup today for Backcountry is Kay, and then you have Angie and Flashbacks and Fresh Tracks. And then Joe closing it out with Blues, Soul, and Funk. And right after I say adieu, there will be the Art Matters program. Heather Lendy and Margaret are getting things together and scurrying around and shuffling papers and getting all ready for this next broadcast, which is going to happen in about a minute and a half. You're tuned to your community radio station, KHNS, proudly serving the Upper Lynn Canal at 102.3, 91.9 on your FM radio dial, Haines, Skagway, and Klukwan. This is Joni. Go on out and make it a great day. Aha, fooled you. This is Outback with Dance the Devil Away. Thank you.
This is KHNS, Haines, Skagway, and Klukwan.
This program is underwritten by the Greater Haines Chamber of Commerce, advocating for a supportive business community.
The following program is a production of KHNS. Its content does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the Board of Directors and staff of Lynn Canal Broadcasting Incorporated, the licensee. And welcome to Art Matters right here on KHNS. Good morning, Heather Lundy.
Good morning, Margaret Friedenauer.
Yeah. Hi.
There's a lot going on this first Friday. It's like it's like a kind of like an explosion. It's like when spring hits, you know,
well,
the Chilkat Valley. It's like
we
it
can
didn't
hope.
It didn't happen weather-wise, but it's happened like activity-wise. It's like crazy boom.
It's like the hooligan on the Chilkat side.
They're over there, I think. I mean, I haven't actually seen one, but I've seen
the birds,
the sea lions, the whole
slick
scene this morning was quite dramatic. And I actually went up past 4 Mile on the, and I didn't see any up there yet. I mean, the river's so low.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of just wondering about that. But, you know, there's no water, but they're all down on Pyramid Island, certainly.
Yeah,
it's great.
All right, so we have a few guests today. We have Karen Garcia talking about books, our book reader. We have a glass artist coming in for First Friday. And then we have Dan Henry on the phone later this hour talking about the Northwoods Book Conference and his
The Writers Conference.
Right.
Yes. Rachel is coming. She's
Rachel.
The glass artist. She's done hammers at the Hammer Museum, and she's got a exhibit at the brewery, so she'll be coming in today.
And we have a huge recap of all the First Friday events going on, a few things happening in Skagway in the coming weeks. They have an opera singer coming to visit.
Oh, wow.
Skagway does, so we'll talk about that, and a whole lot of other stuff.
Yeah,
so,
there's a lot of kids stuff for First Friday.
Oh,
that's the thing. It's like puppets and a run, and so I'll try to make sure we let everybody know about that,
too. Well, we'll be right back.
Okay.
You're listening to Art Matters right here on KHNS. We're hoping to you're listening to Art Matters right here on KHNS, and we might have a little bit of a shake up with our guests today, but we're going to start out with our book reader, reader of books,
which is always, you know, and we're actually going to have another author on later in the show, Dan Henry, whose book was recently released. We'll be talking about books and stuff and Northwoods Writers Conference, but we have Karen Garcia here, and Karen is now you work for Pro Haines.
I do. I'm the creative director for Pro HNS. So I kind of...
Do I call it Pro HNS, not Pro Haines?
Yeah, nobody... It's hard for people to get, you know. They immediately say Pro Haines, and sometimes I correct them, sometimes I don't.
Okay. Please correct me. I don't want to be incorrect on the radio.
But Karen's also a writer.
A writer and a reader.
Yes, I'm a big reader. I studied English literature in college, so I'm kind of a a book snob a little bit, but
that's okay.
I wasn't going to call her that, but no, she kind of is.
I think that we need lots of readers among us to remind us of where we came from and where we're going, and things that the news can't really teach us.
Yes. I just like talking about books with people and hearing what they're reading. And
okay, so what are you reading, Karen?
What I'm reading right now, I'm only about 100 pages in, so I can't give a full analysis of it, but I'm reading The Fifth Season by N.K. Jemisin, which is the first in a science fantasy trilogy, which is so outside of the wheelhouse that I usually read in. But actually, the publisher of the Chilkat Valley News, Kyle Clayton, recommended it to me. He really enjoyed it, and he owned a copy, so he let me borrow it. And I don't know how I feel about it so far, so I'm going to reserve judgment on that. It's about this, like, fictional supercontinent called The Stillness that's plagued every fifth season by catastrophic climate change. So I have a feeling there's going to be some parallels.
So it's one of those sort of dystopian type of...
Yeah, post-apocalyptic kind of things. Except it's not Earth and it's not... They're humans, but they live in this totally different world with where people have powers and stuff like that. Which is, again, I'm very skeptical of.
Well, what is your usual wheelhouse?
Well,
if you have one?
My usual wheelhouse is more... literary fiction. Like there's a book I really want to talk about.
Please do.
That book is called Geek Love by Katherine Dunn. And it had been recommended to me by several people over the years. And the title really turned me off because I assumed it would be about like nerds watching Star Trek or something, some like romantic thing. But geek actually refers to circus freak. It's a circus freak in this book where there's this mother and this father, well, a man and a woman who are in a failing traveling circus, and they start experimenting with radioactive material and drugs and stuff to genetically alter the kids that the woman is having. This is all like just at the very beginning. The story isn't about all these experiments, but they create like a boy with flippers for hands and feet and Siamese twins, and the narrator of the story is an albino hunchback dwarf. And so it's very different. It is like super, it sounds like it's ridiculous, but it's super dark, it's super tragic, and it is incredibly well written, which is very strange because you think that kind of subject matter would be kind of just like silly and hard to take seriously, but Dunn is just an amazing storyteller. And it deals with these themes of, you know, separateness and loneliness and what it means to be normal, family conflict, struggle for power, just a lot of really, really big ideas.
What do you know about Katherine Dunn and when was it written?
It was written in 1989, so it's about 20 years old. And I think this was like her big book. It's a cult classic. I can't really find out that much. I haven't been able to find a lot of positive reviews about some of her other stuff. So it just seems like one of those books that certain people latch onto and get really passionate about and tell all their friends to read. So actually, here's a plug for the Haynesboro Public Library. We don't actually have it at the library, which is one of the reasons it took me so long to finally pick it up. But I have been taking advantage of the interlibrary loan program a lot lately, so I can just request them to get it. And I think Geek Love came from the Mountain View Library in Anchorage, actually. So I returned it the other day. It will be going back, and you can request it through the interlibrary loan program as well if you want to read it.
So even though it sounded a little dark and tragic, you still... We've talked about this a few times. The craft of storytelling is what drew you to it and why you enjoyed it.
And the characters. The characters are extremely well developed, especially Olympia, the narrator. So
gotcha.
I guess the book that I read before Geek Love, which I also highly recommend, I was actually revisiting. It's called Beloved by Toni Morrison. I'm sure many of you are familiar with it. I read it in college, and I remember really enjoying it, but I wanted to revisit it like 10 years later to see how I read it differently. And I assume the library has it. I would be surprised if they didn't I own a copy. But it's about a woman who escapes from slavery. It's set post-Civil War, just about her life and her daughter's life after slavery. And it's magical realism, which is another very interesting genre to me. It's like largely, like I'd say, like 90% realistic, but there's a supernatural element of it that I don't really want to give away too much, because a lot of the book is gradually revealed. There's kind of a twist, not a twist per se, but a big reveal halfway through. But it's like it's a very difficult book to read. It's a lot about the psychological trauma of slavery and how that's passed down through generations. And this book is also, this is 20 years old. This book, it was published in 87.
You must have read Beloved, right?
Late 80s, yeah. And it won the Pulitzer.
It's a hard book to read. It is hard. And you pick it up and put it down, and then you think, I don't know. And I like the idea of going back to it. Sometimes that I've gone back to, like, Louise Erdick's books that when I read them, you know, when I was younger, and they didn't resonate, and then I read them 20 years later, and I'm like, oh, I totally get this now. And, you know.
And Morrison's obviously wonderful. Crafter of words. Mm-hmm. She's won like a million awards. And I was actually reading a little bit about the book last night. And so it won the Pulitzer, but I think before it won the Pulitzer, it failed to win the National Book Award. And like 40 African American writers, including like Maya Angelou and these other prominent people, signed this big petition basically saying, what are you doing? Yeah. This obviously deserved to win. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know that. That was interesting to learn.
And Karen and I are going to do a book switch, because I've been wanting to talk to Karen about one of my favorite books recently, Winter's Bone, and she hasn't read it. But then I discovered Olivia Kitteridge on Amazon Video.
Olive Kitteridge.
Olive, because they call her Kitteridge. Ollie. And so Karen's like, you got to read the book. And I didn't know it was a book.
Haven't read Olive Kitteridge yet?
No, but I like the miniseries on HBO. And I didn't know it was a book when I stumbled on it.
I didn't know it was a miniseries. So
yeah, I didn't know it was a miniseries either.
Frances McDormand, though, she's great.
Oh, does Frances play Olive?
That makes sense.
That makes sense.
So... Mm-hmm. I promised to read that as the book if Karen would read Winter's Bone, so I could talk to Karen about it.
Yes.
Well, I have a question for Karen too. Like, when you read as someone who's a student of literature and, you know, kind of analytic mind, do you get completely lost in the book? Is it like transporting, or are you trying to figure out how they do it or the craft? What's your process?
I actually have totally gotten away from reading as a student of literature, because it's very different, and it's very taxing to read something knowing you're going to have to unpack it and tear it apart and write about it and try to write something new about it that no one has said before, especially if you're writing a thesis or something like that. So after grad school, where that's like amped up times a million from just like undergrad, you're just sitting there discussing books ad nauseum, I kind of rebelled against that, and my reading habits right now are almost entirely just for pleasure and wanting to get lost in something. And that doesn't mean you can't think critically about it, but I don't think about it the same way as I did when I was in school.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, you go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask if she still makes children enjoy thinking critically about it, though, because you do all this stuff with Tournament of Readers with Lee Horner.
I do. I really love doing Tournament of the Readers. I write some of the questions, and I am the quizzard, the question reader.
Quizzard.
I've done it, I think, for the past 3 years. And I do like making kids think critically. Lee chooses the books, and I think she does a great job. The questions, though, are more geared, they're more fact-based rather than thinking-based. Like, what did it mean when X did Y? And what is the big theme in this book? So it's
so not, the questions are more than to do with, like, retention, you know.
Right.
And comprehension, I guess.
Yeah, and to see how closely you read the book, basically. Uh-huh. It's based on Battle of the Books, which is the national program that more people might be familiar with. You're getting them to read anyway, and they're talking about the books with their friends, and they're talking about the books with their parents and their teachers. So I think they're doing that anyway, even though the competition isn't necessarily based on that kind of thinking.
Got it.
So, Karen, when do you read? I mean, you're really busy. You're working full time. You're doing work, W-E-R-K, exercise classes. You're always on the go. What's your preferred reading time and way to do it?
On the weekends, I like to read in the afternoons a lot. I'll spend like a big chunk of time, like 3 hours reading. But every day I make a point of reading at least an hour before I go to bed. So I'll try and read between 10 and 11. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'll read from like 9 to 11, depending on how much time I have. But I always will put down anything I'm doing to read at 10 o'clock. So people know not to contact me then.
Yeah, she shuts me down because we message sometimes. And she's like, I got to go read. I'm like, yeah, I should too.
So I think that's a good practice to have that I got away from for a while. And it's just better. My life is better when I'm reading. I just feel more grounded and like I have something to look forward to at the end of the day. You know,
why do you think that reading, since we're on Art Matters, I mean, why do you think that reading and literature matter in a world now where some people say, oh, geez, you know, we're all quicker and faster paced and we don't need to read these big, long novels, especially. Why is that important?
Well, I think it's important, aside from just the linguistic benefits of learning grammar and spelling. Like, that's why kids should read, because the more you read, the better you can do all those other things, the more literate you are. But it's just a way to experience and understand different people, different cultures, history that you may never otherwise be exposed to. I mean, not everyone can afford to travel. It's a way to experience places you'll never be. I mean, Beloved, like, reading about slavery in an American history textbook is not the same as reading Beloved. So I think that kind of perspective, it makes people more open-minded, more understanding of maybe how other people think. And I think in general, maybe this is kind of a sweeping statement, reading makes people better humans. I think it makes them more able to interact with their peers and their fellow human beings in a way where you're more on the same level and you can understand each other.
Right. Empathy. Mm-hmm. And even Brian Doyle, who writes magical realism, Mink River, some of those novels, if you've read them, from Portland, the late Brian Doyle, who was one of the featured writers at Northwoods a few years back when I was there and has since died. He says something about books and reading, which I think I agree with, where he says it's nutritious. It's fundamental. It's nutritious. He said we should see it as vital as food and water, that those stories, and he's referring particularly to stories and how it goes to something very primal in us, you know, sitting around the campfire telling a story and telling your story so other people can hear it and then being absorbed in that story.
That's why, so I agree with that. And that's why it's sometimes hard for me to understand when you run into someone and they're like, I don't read, or I don't read books, or I don't read short stories. They just read maybe the news a little bit. And I'm just like, but how do you exist? Like, how do you keep going? And part of me, I want to believe that there's something out there for everyone in the literary world and you just have to find it. But I don't know. I'd like to talk more to those people about why they don't have the same experience I do when they read a book. You
know? Well, we will find out. We've got to get now to, we've got our glass person is here, right?
We have to get to art now.
Cool. Any book but right now you want to just recommend to us before you're off?
Oh, I would say please read Geek Love. It was super great. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else I would highly recommend. Fates and Furies by Lauren Groff. I really enjoyed. I read that about a year ago. And when Infinite Jest by David Foster Wallace.
Infinite Jest.
I'll plug it forever.
She'll read it forever.
Yeah, I'll read it a million times. Yes. But it's a hard one. You can get through it though, and you will be rewarded.
Yeah, or you know, if you want to do my, I think one of my very favorite David Foster Wallace nonfiction pieces is Consider the Lobster. You ever read
that? Yeah, Consider the Lobster, the story or the book, the essay.
Just the essay.
Everyone here seems to, everyone.
I mean, the book, I've read the whole book, but that essay in particular is like, great. And for people who say, well, I'm not really a reader or I don't, you know, just read that. And it's like so great.
He's very accessible. He has a story about called, what is it called? It's like the something, a really great thing I'll never do again or something. I can't even remember it now. But it's about him going on a cruise and basically how horrendous it is. And
I think it's in that same collection, the Consider the Lobster collection.
No, it's in a different collection.
That's okay.
I'm sorry that I can't remember.
We'll find it.
We'll find it. We're going to get Rachel in here and talk to her because we better do that. She's waiting. The glass hammer person. You don't want her to...
No, she might...
Bonk on your head.
Break her hammer on my very hard head.
Thanks, Karen.
Karen, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And talking about books.
And okay. When's your next work class?
My work class is on Wednesday at 5:15 at the Zumba Studio.
And it's W-E-R-K. What does it stand
W-E-R-Q.
For?
W-E-R-Q. It doesn't stand for anything. It's just a dance fitness class based on pop and hip hop, and we twerk it, and it's super fun, and it's a judgment-free zone, and you should come and just hang out.
Have a good time.
That's what it's all about.
Well, thanks, Karen.
Thanks, Karen Garcia.
Okay. Yes.
All right, we're back with Art Matters, and Heather Lundy's here with us, and now Rachel is here with us. Hello, Rachel.
Hello.
Right,
Art,
and why don't you just go ahead and introduce yourself?
My name is Rachel Utzler, and I know that last name is really difficult to say, which makes it easy for me to introduce myself.
Well, spell it. It's spelled differently.
Spelled J-U-Z-E-L-E-R.
You noticed why I was saying just Rachel?
And everyone just says Rachel, and that's perfectly fine. Yeah, totally. Okay. And who knows if we're even saying it correctly.
And you're from where?
I live in Juneau, actually Douglas Island. I'm over there at an old, old house on Treadwell. Mm-hmm. I am your rental facility director for the JAC, the Juneau Arts and Culture Center.
Wow, you've got a big project going on there, too.
Oh, my, do we ever.
Yes.
And then I am not there right now because I'm like, I'm going on vacation. I'm going to Haines, and I'm going to go have an art show at the brewery.
And glass. And you do glass.
I do glass work mainly. I do glass work mixed with a lot of found objects. So I'm like, well, I just stopped by the brewery. I'm like, how am I hanging all of this? And now I got to go and find
a few more
things.
Don't make like, you're not making like mugs to put your beer in or anything.
No,
not that kind of glass.
I don't do that. I do actually, though, make all the awards for the homebrew festival. And actually for the Slam and Salmon. Run. Uh-huh. They love those that I make,
right.
And
oh,
I
so
melt
you did the
down.
Discs.
Yep, and those are actually bottoms of beer bottles that I melt down, and I fuse them together with the hook and put your little
those
logo
are really
on them.
Nice.
Yes. Yep.
So a question: glass hammers.
Glass hammers. I know this is the biggest thing in my life. Is I got into the Hammer Museum and the permanent collection. That was actually a Rasmussen Art Acquisition Fund that mm-hmm. did that one, and they ended up buying four of my glass hammers that are over there.
And are they purely decorative or do they have a use?
Purely decorative, yes. Basically, I was inspired to make glass hammers when years and years ago, while I was sitting after the beer festival, we were sitting up at the top of the Chisel Building and we're just hanging out because I knew a friend that was restoring parts of that and looking out at the Hammer Museum. I'm like, you know what? I am going to make glass hammers. So I went home and it took me a year to figure it out. But basically what those are is actually old hammered ball peen hammers are my favorites. And I actually took a cast of an old ball peen hammer that I had And then you make a wax mold out of that, then a plaster mold, and then the glass goes into that after you into the plaster mold. So yeah. It's a kiln formed. And then I attached it with old found handles.
Well, and a glass hammer, I mean, there's a lot of metaphors there in literature. Karen should be here. I mean, gee whiz, a hammer that breaks if you hit, you know, I mean, there's just...
Oh, yes, it's like glass houses.
Yes, you could go along, you could do a lot with glass hammers. It could be an award of some kind, a glass hammer award. Anyway, think about that. But
This is what just happened with my last radio interview. I got totally like, oh, I'm making shovels again. And I make glass shovels, too.
You do?
I do.
That's another one.
I've had
one.
A few of those, yeah. That were actually traveled around in the juried shows at the Anchorage Museum, Earth, Fire, Fiber, and those past.
Full size shovels or little trowels?
Yep. Nope. Full size. I've actually done trowels also, too. But I just the other day, and I was about to put them in this show, but then I had to calm myself down because I'm also making glass fish. I'm making herring right now.
Oh, well, we've got a bunch of little fish out here. Yeah. So, okay, now this brings me to the next question. You kind of said a little bit about it when you were talking about the hammers, but... How do you do this? What's the process? How do you make glass objects?
So I do kiln-formed glass. And basically kiln-formed glass, I can use sheet glass, which is really my niche, was what I really do. The glass hammers, I do more with
for those of us that don't know. Sheet glass.
Sheet glass is like window glass. And I actually use old window glass in a lot of my work. Just for one, it's really expensive to buy glass that's like art glass from Bullseye. Mm-hmm. It's really expensive to ship, as we all know up here. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you can only carry so much in your suitcase every time.
Right.
And so what I really do is I really work with waste materials. I mean, in Juneau, we have the same garbage problems that you guys do here. And so that's really my niche, is using all found materials. So what I'm doing in the process for the sheet glass is I'm basically cutting the glass. I do printing. I do copper inclusions. Right now I found a bunch of box copper nails or staples, and I've been using those for hooks. So I layer those in, gluing the sheets together just with a little touch of glue so they don't slip off while it's firing or moving them into the kiln. And then you go up, and you basically have to do a really controlled firing. So the firing goes up to about 1530 degrees is where it's a full fuse, and then it comes down really slowly. That is the key to glass. And then you have to stop.
Because if it goes fast, what happens? It breaks?
It breaks, yeah. And you need to have a really good annealing firing. And the annealing gives it that strength that you have. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, there's pieces, if you don't have a good anneal on your piece of glass.
Annealing
is when you're holding it at a constant temperature, 900 degrees usually, and it will let the glass molecules basically reshuffle and form back into their solid state.
So do you know, when you stick these sheets of glass in the kiln and the layers of them, do you say to yourself, I'm going to do this and this is how it's going to come out, like baking cookies?
Oh.
Or is it a big surprise?
Well, so is baking cookies, isn't it?
I don't know. You're talking to Margaret, who's got it dialed down. For me,
but no,
it is, but for Margaret, it's
recipes.
Not, probably.
There's definitely a key. I do know the temperatures that I'm going to be using, but I've done a lot of experimentation to get there. But once you do have a key and you do have a really good recipe, you can have fairly consistent turnaround. But there's also using sheet glass. It's also, you know, in the process of making sheet glass, it is rolled out on a bed of there's a metal.
A metal.
Yes, on one side of the glass. So if you feel a piece of window glass, there'll be one side that's a little more slick. And one side that's a little rougher. So you'll get smooth and smoother. And if you have the smoother side is the air side. And then you have the smooth side is just the metal side. If you have that up, face up, and you can see in some of my pieces at my show tomorrow that I'll have some of them turned around the wrong way. And you'll get a little bit of a haze, which is a devitrification is what it's called. And that will just – it's because I have the glass flipped the wrong way. So I had the air side up rather than the metal side up in the kiln.
Now
sometimes it's hard. 50-50.
You've shown this. You've shown your art all over and been part of, you know, as you mentioned, juried exhibits in Anchorage.
I just actually had a show at Bunnell Street Gallery in
Homer.
That's
a great gallery as well.
Yes.
Do Are you self-taught? Are you through a university program?
No, I went to Evergreen way back when, and mm-hmm. Evergreen kind of majored in ceramics a little bit. Mm-hmm. And in ceramics, they always tell you, oh, you're going to go into glass eventually. And
really?
I said, no, I'm not doing that. But eventually, you know, you get older and you're like, yep.
And why is that? What's the
I think maybe it's a fascination with glazes. And it's the kiln firing.
About blowing things. Glass? Do you do anything like that?
I do not do any blowing of glass. I have. I've just gone down and just tried it out just for uh-huh. fun down at Tacoma because you can go do that anywhere.
Yeah.
Okay.
So your glass then is just it's fused or it's
mine's
cast?
Kiln fused or cast.
Cast.
Yeah, so it's all kiln work glass.
And a cast, explain what a cast is. That's like the hammers, right?
Yes. So the cast is basically like what you would do even for a ceramics cast or a mold. And basically you just do a reverse mold process. So I use silicone. And actually, I found silicone in the tube. Silicone number one is actually really good mold-making material. So you basically put a bunch of grease on your hammer or whatever you're going to be casting, do a silicone mold. When that dries, you take that, fill it with wax. It's usually not a paraffin. You use a really more – it's a petroleum-based wax, mm-hmm. and that gives you finer detail. And so you fill the silicone with the wax, remove that, so then you have the exact, it's basically lost mm-hmm. Wax method, mm-hmm. and then you have basically a hammer made out of wax. Use that, pour a silicone and plaster mold over it, then you melt out the wax, and then you fill it with your glass, and then
wow, so it's several stages.
But when you do casting, it really, like when I'm doing fusing, I can do it in a day. But when you do casting, it can take up to 4 days in the kiln. I mean, it really has to go slow. It really takes a long time to get it in there. So casting's a little more intense than the fusing. Fusing, I can do a lot more production work kind of thing.
So the show that you have at the brewery, I'm assuming we'll have...
Everything will be fused.
Everything will be fused. And how long, like when we go to look at that, how much time does that represent in terms of the creative process?
Well, I'm going to have a couple of chandeliers. I'm probably not going to end up putting up my big crab pot chandeliers, but maybe one ounce. Yeah, that's okay. What I use for my big frames.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
I have a couple, one down at Nickelodeon, if you're ever in Juneau. Mm-hmm. Look at the Nickelodeon. There's one that's made out of all chisels. It's like 300 chisels.
Glass chisels.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep. Yeah, because you do glass chisels as well as hammers. Right?
And the crab pot. And the crab pot is the frame. I have two with me, but we'll see if they're probably not going to go up. But I'll have two long, skinny chandeliers, I know for sure. I'll have these things. I've been working with netting from the shrimp pot netting, because then I have all this net. Then I'm like, what am I going to do?
So when you talk about wheelhouse, do you have a fishing background?
Actually, when I moved to Juneau 21 years ago, I made caviar. That was the first thing that I did in town. And
you
then I realized I needed to have a real
was the
job.
Sorry, I'm just going. But it's like this fishing theme is running through, and we have a fisher poet coming as well. So
I mean, we live here.
Yeah.
Like, lived in Juneau for over 21 years. So
now, another thought is, will these pieces be for sale?
Yes.
Yes.
And that's also why I made the heron, because I knew that the beer festival was going to be coming up. And I know that you need small, portable pieces of artwork. Mm-hmm. And so, individual herring will be for sale. Huh. The chandeliers also are for sale. I do actually even have a price list with a bunch of other chandeliers that I won't be showing here. But
so is there like
are available.
For this show, maybe at the brewery, is it more theme-based or just more object-based? Like, these are the items that were maybe easier to bring that kind of show all your different range. But
see, it's changing now since I looked at the brewery this morning.
But
I've been actually working on, I'm doing a really large three-story chandelier for some people in Juneau now.
Wow, just a private collection?
Yeah, pretty much. I do a lot of private chandeliers kind of things. And this one is actually going to have the ulus on it, and then it will have... because I do ulus, like ulu shaped, and then it will have this new piece that I'm doing that are art deco kind of, so art deco glass curtains is what I think I will also be going for over here. I gotta go and figure out my top. I do have train that I brought with me, but I kind of want to go and get some driftwood too.
Gonna have a busy day.
Come in like with a big van of all the stuff? How do you keep it from breaking?
Subaru.
Getting it from here and to there.
I do need to go and get a tire somewhere though. Point me in the right direction. Yeah. That's my other choice.
There any places that you know of that someone who might be interested in learning more about fusing glass or, you know, do you do programs at the Jack at all? Or is there anything?
Not at the Jack at all, but I also run Makerspace. And Juno Makerspace, we are now just about to move into a 6,000 square foot building. I will probably bring down a small glass kiln, and there will be some fusing. And I do classes at Makerspace on the side. I also was just teaching stained glass, but I don't really know how to do stained glass well.
There's several people I know in Haines and in Skagway that do fused glass or different types of glass.
I just heard that we're going to the Svensson's on Sunday.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, and that's something else to talk about. May 6th is the annual. Sunday's May 6th, right?
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah, it's the annual open house at the Extreme Dreams Gallery. And
perfect.
And the Svensson's, of course, do glass mosaics, but they also blow glass. John
and I've been actually in a panel at Gastineau and had them do all the mosaics. They do a lot of 1% for arts in the schools and things like that.
Yeah, and they don't actually make those big sheets of glass, but they cut them and put them all together. Yeah. And it's and
I'm
then we also have
studio.
In the school, some of the art that is in the Haines School, the 1% for art, came from Sarah Bishop. Did some cast glass fish.
I need to go and check that.
Yeah, they're
out
up
too.
By they're up by the front door. So and
perfect.
And I know Terry Bastable Podziki has been working with a group of people in Haines doing.
I've been
glass
doing for the last couple of years. I've been teaching artists too, and been going and trying
and
to
over
teach.
At and Terry obviously worked at Jewel Gardens. They had a component there in Skagway of blowing glass and working with glass out there.
Yeah, a friend that was just working out there, actually.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And even Alaska Indian Arts, and I know now I won't get them all, but they've done work with Preston Singletary and some casting that they did.
One of my favorites.
You know, and they put those pieces of glass inside of carvings or different things. And
that's pretty cool.
Well, I've seen them working a little bit at Alaska Indian Arts here in Haines at one point. I don't know if they're there
right now.
Because I
have my parents with me this weekend, too.
But they did some neat stuff came out of those sort of.
So I'm doing tourist as I'm hanging this art show.
So you brought your parents?
Yes.
That's
because
great.
They were kind of giving me a little grief that said when I was hanging my show in Homer just recently, I'm like, I was hanging it till the last minute. And they're like, we could have gotten that done in a day. And I'm like, well, prove it. So they're here to work for me.
All right. That's great. Well, thank you very much, Rachel, for coming in.
Thank you.
And the show will be up in the brewery for how long, do you think?
It will be up all month.
Oh, great.
Yep. So it would just be hanging out there.
Yeah, because there is a lot going on Friday night.
Yeah, so it would be hard.
So everybody's going to be running from one place to another, but it's good to know that we'll be able to see
that. That's the way to do it. That's what I always end up hanging out at the Jack for first Friday, and then on Saturday I have my art walk day.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me.
Hey, it's great.
Okay, you're listening to Art Matters here on KHNS, and we're going to be talking to Dan Henry in just a moment. But first, because we have so much going on for First Friday.
Yeah, we better
Friday
run
tomorrow.
Down the First Friday. And
go
the first thing to note is that we're really amping it up, and there's a street sign, looks like an old-fashioned street sign, that will say, Haines, First Friday here, post. There won't be one actually in front of every spot. If there's a little collection of two or three businesses participating, they'll be there. But look for the street sign.
Okay.
And that will help when you're walking around town. And I can run down real quick that
Blossom
has handmade knits, totes, merino hats, and headbands by Jenny Reitz.
Excellent.
Amperscanned.
Yep.
They've got the Found Root Seed Company, Seed Starts, and other spring creations. There's an open house at the inn at Haines up there. And right next door, Second Nature has an open house. And they've got a newly expanded store with all kinds of stuff in it. And there's a lot of kids things. So even at the Magpie, Alaska Creations Candles and Clothing by Jacob Warsingi.
Right.
As is going to be displaying there. The other thing that is also happening, where is that? We need to, over at Sarah J's, there's a run.
Oh, right.
But she's also got the smoker going and all that kind of stuff.
She's
going to
have the kid run at 6 p.m. with through community youth development. Yeah.
Right. And then go ahead. You can go do
Lynnview
some more.
Mercantile will have First Friday events going on with arts, cards, and jewelry. The Wild
and
Iris.
That's right. Lynnview Mercantile right across from the Port Chilcoot dock.
The Wild Iris is right here above the Chilcat Center. The distillery, the brewery is going to have Rachel. The distillery is going to have Katie Kirby's oils on canvas. The family stuff going on at the American Bald Eagle Foundation, they're going to have a whole showcase and family event with the Owl. And then Babbling Book, along with the Arts Confluence office, they're doing that whole thing with a puppet show with the kids from the
school. Right, the kids from the school that worked with Geppetto's Junkyard. There's also a puppet show at Uniquely Alaskan.
Oh, right.
The gallery downtown, Tresham Gregg's gallery on the corner, you know, behind Hauser's. And I do, again, I want to give a little plug for the, if you haven't been into the Lynn Canal Mercantile, a lot of really creative stuff in there. Yeah, it's really interesting, and it's not necessarily in everybody's loop yet, but Colleen Adams has done a great job in there. So, old-time Alaskans may know about Herb Bonnet. Seen paintings around town. The late Herb Bonnet is having Alaska Rods. Will be displaying his paintings and prints. And real well-known old-timey Juneau artist. I know there was a painting forever that I saw in Mimi Gregg's house for years. You know. But he's a boat guy. And so he does boats and bridges and landscapes of the sea. And it's really neat that Alaska Rod...
A quick ride to the post office.
Art. Think of him as with a district. Sort of like a Gil Smith of maritime Southeast Alaska stuff. And
Well, beyond First Friday, well, also, just last thing, Haines Sheldon Museum is having still the ongoing fortnight. So they'll have ethnologists of Chilcat Valley tomorrow night, 6:30 at the museum. Mm-hmm. But then beyond First Friday, we're going to have the Fisher Poet will be at the Pioneer Bar on Saturday night. Steve Schoonmaker.
Is he also? I thought he was on First Friday night too.
No,
It's Saturday night.
Oh,
see, I was going to go Friday. Yeah. That's good to know. And it's Steve Schoonmaker.
Schoonmaker. We tried to get him on the show, but I think he's traveling right
he's
now.
He's a real popular Fisher Poet. He's from Cordova. It's great. He recites poetry, and we all know that fishermen have poets' hearts. At least
a little bit
do.
Salty, but yes, they have.
But he does beautiful, and he says he's got something like 22, 23 memorized.
Yeah.
He's an old-fashioned bard poet.
Well, and I did want to mention, because following him is the usual open mic night at the Pioneer, so they're going to encourage people to bring their own fishing poetry and songs to share for open mic night that night.
That is great. And that is Saturday night. So that's really good to know, because then you can get in all the First Friday stuff and then go out again on Saturday.
Right.
So,
and finally, before we go to Dan, I did want to give a plug for the Skagway Arts Council is bringing an opera singer to town. And that's next week. Catherine Dane, a soprano from the Netherlands. She's going to be performing with keyboard and conductor Jeffrey Grossman. And they will be performing at the Skagway Public Library on Wednesday, May 9th at 7 p.m. They'll also be providing outreach